Hi, this is Sean Kennedy. I'm the Editor-in-Chief of the American Journal of Nursing, and today is April 16th, Thursday, 2020, and we are here in the middle of a pandemic of COVID-19. I'm speaking today with two members of the Visiting Nurse Service of New York, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer Dan Savitt, and Visiting Nurse Ruth Caballero. So I want to welcome you both and thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to speak with me. Dan, would you talk a little bit first about what it is you do at the Visiting Nurse Service of New York and give a little background on, for example, how many visiting nurses you have employed and what your catchment area is, and just a little bit of background about the Visiting Nurse Service of New York.
Sure. Thanks for having us, by the way. And so my role as CFO really is in a number of ways. One, strategy, and so I spent a lot of time there, and then formally finance and technology and data analytics and revenue cycle and managed care contracting. So a number of administrative functions. For Visiting Nurse Service of New York, you know, we're two things. We're a health plan and a provider. And in our provider space, we do a number of things in the home, predominantly hospice, home health, home care, community mental health. And then we also have an extensive population health and care management organization. And all of those utilize nursing and other clinical and non-clinical staff. A little bit about us, you know, we've been around for 127 years. We've been primarily, you know, working out in the community. And, you know, our nurses and healthcare workers have helped New York fight the Spanish flu, Ebola, and other global pandemics, which is very relevant to what we're talking about here. So, you know, we're ready and leading again on the COVID-19 front. And with that, we have, you know, a pretty large staff of clinicians. In total, we have about 1,500 nurses. And on rehab therapists, we have 373. We have another 400 social workers. And we have other clinical staff as well. And then in our Partners in Care, home care business, we employ about 9,000 home health aides.
Mm-hmm. Wow, big operation. So are you still, you're not still down on Henry Street, are you?
We are not. So that's the original Henry Street settlement where Visiting Nurse Service of New York grew out of, but we are actually, we have a number of different spots we are, but we primarily work in the community, right? So we have a home office off of 42nd Street, but we have a number of different offices throughout mm-hmm. the five boroughs. And so, you know, our service area is primarily the five boroughs of New York City, and then Nassau and Westchester as well. And so, and then our health plan is a New York State-wide health plan where we have about 20,000 Medicaid long-term care members, which is very relevant as it relates mm-hmm. to the fight against COVID-19, and another 3,000 what we call Medicaid Advantage plans. So very similar to the Medicaid long-term care folks, and then we also have 3,000 members in our HIV special needs mm-hmm. plan, all of which are certainly vulnerable to COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ruth, as a visiting nurse, tell us a little bit, if you would, about what your position is and entails and where you see patients.
Well, my position is a public health nurse and a case coordinator. So I see patients up in the Upper Manhattan area, which is Washington Heights. I cover cases from, let's say, 180th Street all the way to the end of Manhattan, like 194. I primarily see patients that are discharged from the hospital, you know, med-surg patients, cardiac care patients, you know, wound care patients, diabetic patients, and now my new patients are all patients being discharged from the hospital. Majority of them are the patients that are being discharged from the hospital that are still positive for COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about what you're seeing these clients' needs to be. Are they, you know, that we see them getting out of the hospital, and many of them have been on ventilators and intensive care, and understandably are probably very weak and undernourished at this point and just glad to get home. So what are you seeing in terms of their needs as you see them in their homes?
Well, that's a great way that you stated that, because it's true. Every patient that comes home is undernourished. They're weak. They're debilitated. They don't have a lot of energy. The energy level is very low. They've been in bed for some of them 2 to 3 weeks. Some of them have been on ventilators during that time. So after they've been weaned off of the ventilators and are now able to breathe on their own, they now can start having, you know, light meals, fluids. So when they come home, they're very weak. Mm-hmm. They're very debilitated, and they need a lot of family support, and they need home care support. So when I go in to see the patient, I'm actually even teaching the patient and the family on how to take care of the patient so that they don't decompensate and go back into the hospital. And also, I'm reinforcing precautions against spreading the COVID-19 virus, because the patients are still positive when they come home.
Mm-hmm. And what kinds of personal protective wear do you use now going into the home?
Well, VNS has provided us with excellent PPEs. So we're using the hospital gown, we're using the hair cover, I'm using the N95, I'm putting the surgical mask over the N95, I'm using the shield, I'm using the covers for my feet, I'm using the gloves. So I don all of that outside of the patient's home, using hand sanitizer as I'm putting on each item. And I do explain this to the patient and the family prior to coming in.
Mm-hmm. And what do the...
Go
ahead. I was going to ask you. So assuming that the family member has somebody there helping them because they are so weak, I mean, and maybe that's a bad assumption for some people, but assuming, do you teach the family member as well what they need to do in terms of what they are they wearing, any kind of protective gear or just a mask, or do they do?
Well, when I come in, I call the family member before. I call the home before I come in. I do explain to them what needs to be done, that everyone should have a mask on. And in each case I've opened, we've had family members that are present. I've explained to them about distancing 6 feet away from the patient at all times, unless they're providing direct care. And if they have small children, they have to keep small children away from the patient, you know, because we don't want this virus to spread to children. So I do spend the time counseling them about the behavior, what they should use, and I also tell the patients about if they do go outside, they have to wear a mask, maintain 6 feet of distance, and if possible, to avoid going outside, you know, unless they're going for a doctor's appointment. For, I'd say, the first, 7 to 10 days. Mm-hmm. But I do, most patients that I've gone to, it appears one of the family members that live with the client is negative. Because I had a patient and the wife said she did have the coronavirus, but it didn't require that she needed hospitalization. But her husband did need hospitalization.
Mm-hmm. The family members, have they all received tests since they've had a family member and they're now living with them? Have they all been tested?
No. I haven't had one family member. They've told me about the symptoms they've had that were, you know, that were markers for the coronavirus, but none of the family members have been tested.
Oh, okay. And what about, Dan, I don't know whether the question for you or Ruth, in terms of the staff being tested?
So we only test in certain situations, but we have a protocol and that's required for when there are symptoms or when you've been exposed. And so testing is a critical need in New York State and New York City in particular. And Ruth might perhaps be able to provide more detail on some of those protocols.
Mm-hmm. Well, I actually check my temperature every day, twice, first thing in the morning, first thing at night. I want to make sure that I don't present with an elevated temperature. I wear a mask as soon as I walk out of my home. I use hand sanitizer constantly. As soon as I walk into a patient's home, I go straight to the bathroom, wash my hands for 20 seconds, use paper towels, and then I use hand sanitizer again. And I do encourage all of my patients to use a mask when I'm in their home to see them. Mm-hmm. And so I have to say that I'm doing whatever I need to do to make sure that I'm not presenting with any of the markers that say that I may be positive for the COVID-19 virus.
Right, and then I guess if you do have an elevated temp or have any develop any symptoms, then you would meet a protocol for being tested.
Yes, I would inform VNSNY. We have a division that now has they set up for that. I would then automatically self-quarantine myself for 7 days. Then I would reach out to my primary doctor and explain. My doctor knows that I'm a nurse. He knows I'm a public health nurse. And then he would then direct me where to go to be tested. Mm-hmm. I have to say I've in the last 3 weeks, I've opened up about six, and even today, positive COVID-19 patients. And I'm happy to say that I've, you know, followed the VNS protocols in reference to the PPEs to protect myself and also mm-hmm. to protect the patient.
Mm-hmm. I see. So, but if you had symptoms, you go to your own physician. There's not a central visiting nurse service in New York doesn't have a central place or like an employee health where people would go then.
So part of the protocols, we do have, as Ruth stated, like we have an employee health program that's very dialed in here, and there is a set of protocols. You know, if you are symptomatic, then you would call our health services department, and you would be instructed on what to do, on how long to quarantine, and whether or not you would need to go ahead and get tested at that time, and we would help coordinate those tests.
Mm. Now, in terms of Ruth, you talked about all your patients are COVID-19 patients. Across the system, Dan, is that what you're seeing across all the other areas under your catchment area, that all the patients now are largely COVID patients?
Well, no, we still, so when this started, we had a census, you know, an active home health census of about 7,000 patients. Mm-hmm. And so, and at that time, we continue to service those 7,000 as we've needed to. And of course, at that, you know, none of those were presumed positive. What I would say is after developing the protocols and ensuring we had the right equipment and the right education in place, we then were able to proactively take COVID positive discharges from the hospital and do it safely. Mm-hmm. But we certainly had a protocol and have had a protocol in place by which we screen every patient every day, every patient we're going to visit every day. So if you see a patient 4 days in a row, you would call them every day mm-hmm. and we would screen them for symptoms, and that way we would know what we were coming into. And so, you know, the key for us has been very clearly we moved quickly to get a set of solid clinical protocols in place, which continue every day to evolve, and then communicate and educate all our staff. Mm-hmm. And that's been absolutely critical for us, and has been continues to be important for us as we support the community.
Mm. Have you, are there some patients that you don't see or doing more telephone check-ins rather than actual, you know, if it wasn't for the shutdown orders and the social distancing, et cetera, that you would be seeing, but you're not seeing and doing phone check-ins? Do you have people in that category where you're trying to back off seeing so many people because of the shutdown orders?
Yes, we were very quick to say, okay, what's most important, right? one, our staff and their safety, two, the patients and their safety. And so how do we quickly get our arms around what's an essential visit? Mm-hmm. And so we spent, you know, very quickly the clinical leadership, you know, came around this idea of what's an essential visit. Mm-hmm. How do we work with the patients, right, and the physicians to revise a plan of care and do as many mm-hmm. televisits as we possibly can, because it just didn't make sense for us to do non-essential visits. You're just putting everybody at risk. And so that's been a part of our protocol.
Can you give me an idea of what, you know, an essential visit might be? Certainly the recent discharge patients from COVID.
But. Yeah, that's a great question. I'll let Ruth answer from a clinical standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, right? It's the risk of a hospitalization and the risk of exasperation, right? Mm-hmm. And but there's much more to it than that, and I'll let Ruth take it from here.
Okay. So an essential visit for me is a patient who has a surgical wound. So the patient needs surgical wound care.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go in and I would see that patient per the doctor's order. And then we have another essential visit would be, let's say, a patient that's a stroke patient, a patient at a CBA. He or she just came out the hospital. That's an essential visit.
Mm-hmm.
A patient that's a new diabetic. Mm-hmm. They were admitted to the hospital with hyperglycemia. So we need to make sure that their blood sugars are under control, and we have teaching on that. Another essential visit, I would say, is we have patients that are, cancer patients.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming out of the hospital post having chemo or radiation therapy. So those would be considered essential visits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that would be probably for the first 2 weeks, and then we would taper down.
Mm-hmm.
With maybe a one visit, one face-to-face visit, and one telephone care visit, or one telephone video visit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess technology is really very helpful in terms of the video visits these days.
Yes,
it has become for us, and there's also regulatory concerns here. So you have a plan of care established prior to the outbreak. And you can't just interrupt that plan of care. And so, you know, the challenge for us has been, how do you, in the regulatory environment, as we, you know, approach the Department of Health at the state and the local level, as well as CMS and the national level, right? How do you ensure you get regulatory relief and can start conducting these visits? And we're able to get some of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to go through every case, right? And you have to look at every case and document and communicate to the physician and get sign off. So it wasn't, what I would say is, you know, if we're seeing 7,000, a census of 7,000 on March 1st, by March 31st, that was 2,000, right? It was 7,000 to 5,000 or whatever the number is. But there's a tapering there and a work that has to be done in order to do it right and to ensure patient safety as well
mm-hmm.
in that context.
And Ruth, tell me about the clients that you're seeing who've just been discharged in their home now, recuperating from COVID-19. What's their frame of mind like? In terms of such a life-threatening experience, I know every patient is different, but do you get a sense that they are kind of in shock about this whole thing, or talk a little bit about what you're hearing from these patients?
Well, I'm a lot of fear that, oh my goodness, I was sick, I was in a hospital, I was intubated, you know, am I going to have a long-term medical problem post this, mm-hmm. having this virus?
Mm-hmm.
They're fearful that it will come back. Will I become positive again? So we do a lot of teaching in regards to that. But a lot of fear. I find the patients are very fearful, and they're very weak, and they're just afraid of possibly not having a positive health outcome post surviving this virus, because they're still positive.
Mm-hmm. Not getting back to their old self in some sense. And can you tell me the patients that you've seen, are they mostly older patients, or are they young, or a mixture, or?
It's a mixture. I'm seeing patients just today. I had a patient that I opened up. She's 58 years old. Mm-hmm. She's young. She was working. She said she just started not feeling well, and then she went downhill very quickly. No one else in her home. She's a grandmother. She lives with her daughter and son-in-law and grandchildren, and no one else in the home became positive. But she said it came on so quickly, mm-hmm. you know, the symptoms, and by the time she realized she wasn't feeling well, she had to be admitted. And then I've seen patients that are in their mid to late 60s. Mm-hmm. I've had patients I've opened up that are in their 80s, mm-hmm. but they're, you know, they're up, they're walking, they're debilitated, they're tired, but they want to get back to their normal routine.
Yeah.
So it's across the board. I haven't had anyone thus far in their 40s, but that doesn't mean that that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's affecting all age groups.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing from talking with nurses in hospitals and mm-hmm. even the nurses themselves. Well, I want to thank you both very much for taking the time to talk to me a little bit about this and giving us an idea of what's happening out in the community in terms of what care is needed and what you all are doing through the Visiting Nurse Service in New York. Is there anything, Ruth, that you would say to nurses who are listening in terms of, you know, what they should be thinking about in terms of their communities?
I would say that one of the things I tell all of my patients that are coming home that are COVID positive is that they are survivors, they're champions, and that we're there here to assist them in reaching their optimal level of health. And I would say to my fellow colleagues that this is why we're here. This is why we are nurses. We are here to help patients get well. And I have to say that every day that I have a patient, that I get a text message or email where you have a new discharge patient from the hospital that's COVID positive, I do a high five. I'm just very, very happy that they are strong enough to come home. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to working with them.
Well, that's a great message for all nurses to hear. And thank you so much for all that you're doing. And Dan, for all the support you're giving the nurses on the front lines who are out in the homes and working in the community. So thank you both very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.